It's John Connor. Stop talking, you idiot. Stop whining. Good morning. What's your name? I'm going to ask you a few questions and I want them answered immediately.
Oh yeah, we're back. It's Chatting Between Takes. I'm your host, Sean Benson. I believe this is called, what, gang taping? Gang raping? Ooh, no you didn't. Gang tape. I think when you record more than one podcast at once, there's the word gang is in there somewhere. Gangway. Do people still say gangway? I know that like in Archie Comics, that used to be a thing. Or I think even Chet Morton in Hardy Boys used to say that when he'd sort of like, you know, tumble into a situation as he was wont to do. And then he might yell gangway as he's sort of like, you know, busting into a group, trying not to run into anyone. Because, you know, he's a little chubby, Chet Morton. Didn't always have control of the body. Gangway! So, this is sort of part two. You know, I'm here on the Autobahn in Germany. So I should stop doing the Arnold, the Austrian, maybe start, you know, they're pretty linked. The German, I mean, there's some dialectal differences, but the German's the same. Hitler, Austrian, not German. Obviously became German Chancellor. German whatever. Anyways, you know, I was thinking about bullying. Again, last podcast we talked a lot about that, which is, by the way, I'm doing 190 right now. Arrest me, bitch cops. Oh, another thing, by the way. Guess what cops get to do here in Germany? Fight crime. What do you know? They actually get to go do, like, fight crime. Imagine being a German police officer who's fighting crime. Look, again, there are some spots with speed limits, but they're very reasonable. Major construction, small city center. In any case, they get to fight crime. Imagine sending them to Canada and going, oh no, you have to sit behind a bush with this little radar gun. No, 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 you don't get to go fight crime. You don't get to actually help people who are being wronged by another person. You have to sit behind a little bush. And they'll be like, but why? They're not doing anything wrong. And they'll be like, oh no, here that's supposed to be wrong. Anyways, just saying. Talking in the last podcast about familial echoes, you know, kind of being one of the things that then I think filter through all my dynamics and interactions. So I was thinking about bullying, right? And I was wondering about bullies. Are they ever satisfied? And the reason I ask is this. I'll use my mom as an example. So if you disagree with her or if she disagrees with you, then she just kind of becomes loud and angry to a point where you just kind of want out of the interaction. Not all the time. This actually didn't even happen with her on this trip. But it is my familial root of this idea. So at that point, you just kind of acquiesce. She's bullied through belligerence and anger, including like raising her voice at restaurants or in airports or whatever, like to a shriek. So you just kind of give in. That's bullying. You haven't agreed to any of the initial stuff, but then, you know, she could get this sort of like smug, like, because it ends up going her way. But is that really going someone's way? And I'll use physical aggression as one. You know, you're disagreeing with someone, but you're a badass, or maybe you're actually confronting someone physically, so they back down because they don't want to fight. Now, it doesn't mean they've agreed, right? And again, so I wonder if a bully's ever actually satisfied. Now, it's one thing if you maybe do that to, like, close a billion-dollar deal, and that's kind of, like, I'm talking fighting. Like, you're in there scrapping it out, art of war. Whether it's UFC, yeah, go bully. Like, bully your opponent. or you're trying to win the art of the deal, go bully your opponent. That, to me, makes a bit of sense. That's when you want to do that. I'm talking interactions. I'm talking the glue of life, the nuance. If you're bullying through normal interactions, are you ever satisfied? And the way I think about it is like, yeah, you're toe-to-toe with someone, and they just kind of go, yeah, well, fine, whatever. Does that feel good for a bully to go, ah, see? Or is there a point where it's like, you never actually know if you're right, because people just agree to get out of the interaction, which must kind of suck. I think about being a really rich 70-year-old with a hot 30-year-old wife. You never know if it's for you or your money. Now, maybe if you're just getting your dick sucked by a hot 30-year-old and you've taken enough Viagra, you don't care. Maybe that's what you want. So again, maybe I'm putting a sort of paradigm of wanting a healthy, normal interaction into the body and soul of people who don't give a shit about that. Because we all believe that, I think we want to believe, at least our movies and society would tell us, that inherently a bully wants to be defeated so that they can be one of, right? Part of. Isolation is bad. Being part of is good. Now, we know that's true. That's what all spiritualism is based around. That's what all of my good vibes are based around. You know, I posted a photo on Instagram of me and a bunch of people playing and singing around a campfire. And, you know, I think I just put the word happiness hashtag. Because that's, like, that's it, right? What else is needed in that moment? So if I start to need to assert myself, like I did, by the way, when I was 15, and needed to be the only guy playing guitar, then what ends up happening is isolation. So yeah, I get to play guitar. I probably get to be the only one playing guitar, but I get to sit alone at a campfire doing it. So again, I liken that to really what I'm talking about. Where's the satisfaction in that? But again, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there is just genuine, like, evil. There's just genuine anger that isn't a second tier to a fear-based operating system that really would be happier on a more sort of faith-based joy system. You know what I'm saying? I mean, of course you know what I'm saying. It's not unclear. There might just be that. Because my big thing when I'm, you know, posting stuff about, let's say, politics or whatever is, don't think the way you think is how other people think. Like, don't think that everybody's a liberal if you're a liberal, and vice versa. Don't think everybody's a conservative. That's the mistake. And by the way, to me, that's the mistake to actually growing. Is in that assumption, I'm either assuming I know what you think, or I'm going to disregard what doesn't fit with what I want you to think. And this goes a bit to my old fucking Porsche mechanic, who was a total racist. Unabashed. I mean, I'm not telling tales out of school here. This guy, man, he used to fucking, like, you know, we'd be out at racetracks and he'd just say things like, you know, Sean, white is right. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And then 30 seconds later, be like, Sean, don't go off on corner four. You can roll your car. And later that day, someone would roll their car on corner four. Here's my point. I don't have to discard everything about somebody just because I don't like something about somebody. But there might be deal breakers. What's interesting about this guy is if you walked up to him, he was a mechanic on the racetrack, and you were a black dude, and you had an issue with your car, he'd fix it with you, for you, on the spot, wouldn't let you pay, even if you were driving a fucking water-cooled car, which he hated. So in action, I never saw the guy actually be racist. I just saw him say a lot of shit, which is interesting, again, because it's called living in the gray. Now, that doesn't give everyone a free pass, but some of my favorite people don't agree with me on a lot of stuff. And so, A, I want to listen, Because if I value them, they may have a way of looking at something or a way that I could think about something instead of me just going, well, blah, blah, blah. Because I get pretty bored of my own kind a lot, you know? Maybe it's part of the reason I travel. To my homeland, right? Look at me, I'm going to Germany to experience diversity, apparently. But it is for me as a Canadian. This is a different experience for me. I've been speaking German all week. And I'm not great at German, but I'm not bad at it. And I can get through this whole country. I'd never have to speak a word of English. I'd probably never say a single sentence correctly in German. Because my mom was German and spoke to us German as kids, I have a real good accent, so I don't sound... So it's a bit like my French, which is very... One of the nicest compliments I've ever gotten in my life was that a woman who was from Paris thought I was raised in Paris based on my accent. That was a huge compliment to me. I like that. I don't actually speak a lot of French, and I don't speak it well, but what I speak is sort of... I learned it over there, so that's what it is. Same with my German. It was a very pure German I learned. It was an unaccented German I learned. So I can get around, you know. What I was going to say is that sometimes when you say that first sentence too well, they answer, oh, yeah, and just, what the fuck? Yeah, no, all I got was to turn left, and I lost everything after that. But enough to get around. And, you know, this for me is one of these things about language and communication. I grew up as a bit of a ponce, you know. Now, on one hand, I like that I know what grammar is, and I like that I know how grammar works, and I don't love reading. It's the whole glass houses throwing stones thing. How many Facebook comments do I see with somebody shredding somebody else, but with grammar mistakes in it? And I'm like, how are you sitting there? But again, are we not allowed to have opinions unless we're perfect? There's a balance there. How much of a dumb fuck can I be while going, you're a dumb fuck, versus, it's okay that my German's not perfect as long as you get what I'm saying. I actually think I tend toward the latter, and that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that I grew up very much, you know, my dad was an English professor, and so grammar was corrected in the house. I didn't mind it. It was never shit. It was like, you know, it's funny. I look at my brother's daughters, my nieces. They're so curious. They're so curious. If you go, do you know what the provinces are? They just turned 9, but the one was 8. And she'll be like, no, what are they? And you'll tell her, and she'll be like, okay, can you do them from west to east? Okay, now east to west. And then she'll try them all those different ways. Or if you say to her, you know, do you know what 4 times 25 is? She'll go, hold on. Not, no. Now, I don't know where that comes from. I mean, in my brother and sister-in-law's house, I mean, she's a teacher as well. So you're not allowed to just schlup it off from, I guess, a young age. But I have a feeling it's more of an inherent curiosity. My parents loved learning. And I always say, if you want to teach someone to read, I don't know about kids, you want to teach someone to read, read in front of them. Don't read to them. That's teaching them to be read to. You know, so if I want, yeah, it's the example as opposed to the words. Because again, show me, don't tell me. Which is why I hate people who tell me what kind of person they are, because they're usually wrong. So I'm not talking about sounding stuff out with your kid. Obviously, that's helping them read. But reading to them is reading to them. Reading around them is reading. And there's a good chance they'll pick up a book. I don't know these days with iPhones and iPads. Probably not. I'm probably deluded and have a romantic notion about every single thing in the world. I was thinking about music because I have vinyl. I grew up on vinyl. I love vinyl, genuinely love vinyl. And not just me, you know, I put on a Jackson Browne high quality MP3 and then Jackson Browne, you know, vinyl. And Emily was upstairs and I was like, let me A-B these for you. And I put on the one and then I put on the other and she's like, see, that is so much fucking better. What's that, the MP3? I was like, no, it's not. It's the album. So yeah, there's just, you can hear the separation. It's a real thing. Vinyl is real. MP3s are real too, but the difference is real. However, as much as I love vinyl, and I've sort of weird, I get annoyed if sound's not right in my ears, I would take digital files for the rest of my life over vinyl if I only had one choice. And for me, it's simply about portability. You know, I can listen in the car, I can listen whatever, I can have 10,000 songs on my iPod. Does anyone remember iPods? Do people still get iPods? Man, iPhones sure did a number on iPods and Walkmans. The Walkman? I mean, for me, it's just hands down digital. Not true for cameras. I love film. And even though I make a living, or a part of my living, off shooting, and that involves digital, I could still do that on film. But if you said to me, you could only do one, I'd take film. And the reason I take film is there's a joy and there's a texture, and I know you can quote-unquote recreate it digitally, but it's just there with film. So I don't want to do all that if I don't have to, and if I've only got one option, it's going to be film. It'll cost me a little more to shoot headshots. There'll probably be a blown roll here or there, and I'll have to scramble to make the client happy. But the tactile joy of it is worth it. Now, the reason I say all that is I'm not a Luddite. You know, I have a 30-year-old sports car, but I'd go buy a Cayman GT4 tomorrow if I had the money. I'd have both. I'm guessing after driving the GT4, if you said you could only have one, I'd probably keep the GT4. And this goes back to my Steve McQueen wasn't retro. You know, Steve McQueen's Rolex was new. Paul Newman's Daytona was new. They were doing the best of what they could at the time. Obviously, these were rich men. But these were new. So they weren't walking around going, oh, give me the 40-year-old Rolly so I can be whatever. They were just wearing the one that was new. Sorry, I'm honking at someone who's coming into my lane. Jesus, that guy's fucking out of it. Anyways, they were new, and I imagine that I'd have a lot more fun on that racetrack in the GT4. It's a lot more fun to drive a slow car fast than a fast car slow, so that's where the, like, winding city street stuff comes in, you know. That becomes an interesting coin toss. I took an acquaintance's 1973 Porsche Targa back-to-back with mine, and it was actually a lovely thing, okay? Back in the early 2000s, if you asked anybody, because I did, I was buying cars at the time, do I want this old 911T Porsche? Everyone would kind of laugh in your face compared to, like, a 3.2 or a 993, because the car just wasn't as good. And then this thing called the market showed up, and because these older cars aren't made anymore, and they're a specific look and style, which is, by the way, stunning, now people who would have always said get a mid-80s or newer, you know, the newest you can afford, Porsche, were now starting to go, oh no, I need these early ones. But it's not because they were better cars, it's because they were rarer cars. And that trend is continuing. You could buy a 1973 Carrera RS in the back of the Porsche magazine in 2003. There were two advertised for in the 70,000s, 72 grand. And at the time, my dealer, who sold me my, whatever, $30,000 911, was like, yeah, those are overpriced. Well, one's for sale now for $1.275 million on Pelican Parts. The car's brilliant. I wish I could have one, that one. This 911T I drove was nice, but not nicer than my car. And I'm glad I had that experience because I can get swayed by markets too. But I didn't buy my car as an investment. I could foresee maybe that in the future, but my problem is I like driving them too much. So if I had that 1973 Carrera RS, it would go down in value under my ownership. Probably not. I'm not going to crash it and I would maintain it. But you know what I'm saying? Is that I'd be the guy at the track with the million-dollar car because I'm not going to track that car. That's what the fucking thing was made for. That's what I'm going to do with it. So that's why I have trouble buying investment vehicles. So it's very nice to drive one and go, this is nice, but I still agree with what the opinion, i.e., the un... what's the word? The market hadn't affected the opinion, which was simply an opinion based on quality. Untainted isn't the right word. I'm going to try and think of that. This is going to bother me the whole drive. Great, I just fucked my drive to Frankfurt. Undistorted a bit. I think that's not actually a bad version of the word. Is that there a distortion occurs when the market shows up because something whose value tangibly would be considered less all of a sudden becomes greater, and then my perception of which car I want is distorted. I've always wanted kind of the best, quickest, fastest, tightest Porsche for the money, and that's not the 1973 911 T-Targa. That's really all I'm getting at. But it is tough when a market shows up to go, what's the best? And again, this goes back to the idea of Paul Newman had the newest, fastest car he could afford. He was racing Datsuns in the 80s, you know. He could do whatever he wanted with his money at that point, and that's what he chose to run, and those cars were brilliant. And so I think sometimes again, this goes a bit to what I said in the last podcast. I'm letting someone else interpret for me, and I don't really want to do that, hence the experience I want and need to have. Because if I don't have any experience, A, I'll rely on people to interpret stuff. But the thing is, I don't need to rely on people to interpret stuff. In other words, I don't need to have any opinion about Syrian refugees. I think this is what gets forgotten, right? I have no opinion about the Blue Jays. I love Toronto, and it seems like Toronto's buzzing. I like that. But I have zero baseball opinion. I don't care about baseball.
Faggot.
Queer. So, wow. Where did that come from? I don't need an opinion. You don't need an opinion about Syrian refugees. You don't need an opinion about Trump. You don't need an opinion. You might have one because you're into it, but you don't need one. You know, we don't all need to talk about the show at the wall. I remember as a kid, I watched A-Team. I didn't love A-Team. Heather May. She was actually my first girlfriend, I think. Shared a little kiss at the corner store, grade 4 or 5. And I remember one day her talking about A-Team and how much she loved The Night Before's episode. And for a moment, I had a twang of, oh, I wish I'd seen that. Because I wanted to talk to her about it. But I hadn't seen it, and this was pre, you know, digital, so I couldn't go look it up. The moment passed, and that was that. Now, if it was today, I'd probably go look up last night's episode, you know, and it's like, so all of a sudden what I'm doing is I'm finding this weird middle that isn't authentic to me because I probably was enjoying Three's Company more. Now, two things. One is, maybe I should have found a girl as my first girlfriend who liked Three's Company. Maybe that's why Heather May never quite put out. What else? Of course she did. We kissed at the corner store. Or who gives a shit? My partner doesn't need to like the same things I like, and I don't need to fake a middle-of-the-road engagement on it. I just don't need an opinion on things I don't need an opinion on. And that's a bit of what I'm talking about with the internet linking me to Porsche markets that have nothing to do with what's for sale in my area and what I'm willing to pay. That's my actual tactile, hands-on experience. Speaking of, rented an Audi TT convertible, diesel. I have no idea if it's getting the claim to anything, but holy shit, this car is phenomenal. If you have the means, I don't think I'd ever buy this for the $3,000 it costs less than a Porsche Boxster, having driven both, would always take the Boxster. But it's amazing, car rental. I'm renting this thing for like well under 100 euros a day with full insurance, because on a 2,500 kilometer week-long trip, I just did not want to, you know, I just want to hand the keys back no matter what. That's a great rate. Porsche Boxster base model only costs $3,000 more than this car, Canadian, not euros, and is 350 euros a day to rent before you add the GPS and shit. Crazy. By the way, I've always been one of these, as I said, analog guys. Give me old school dials. Give me a fucking proper radio. You know, not this digital shit. Well, I don't know. I might be changing my tune. I'm pulling over to pee. The navigation system in this is brilliant. It is brilliant. My God, I love it. It sits between the digital dials, and I can change my view and perspective. It is phenomenal. I'm going to talk more about it after I pee. Ah, so much better. I do not wish this baby's bladder in a man's body on anyone. What can you do? Ever since I was a kid, I always had to get up in the middle of the night more than once to have a pee. Maybe just once. Probably more than once. The trend continues. Yeah, you know, don't knock it till you tried it. It's interesting, though, because, again, loving this, would prefer the Boxster, even though it is a bit more analog. So I don't know if I'd prefer it on the road trip that I've done. Partly because my mom can't read maps very well anymore. It'd be hard without navigation. I'm sure you can add one in the thing. You're probably listening going, dude, it's called $3 a day for the dash-mounted sat-nav. But the integration of this one is brilliant. I don't have to take my hands off the wheel. Can just kind of... So big ups to Audi. I would 100% consider buying an Audi as the next family car, non-sports car. It's that good. It's that good. Rentals are cool that way. You know, I wonder, it's kind of a bit of what I was saying about the classifications through the market. So all of a sudden, a pre-73 Porsche becomes worth five times what it was 10 years ago for no reason other than the market has kind of decided they're rarer and prettier for a while. So, you know, it's funny. Back in the day, people used to take those and do what's called forward dating them and make them look like the 80s cars. Now you can charge a premium if you've taken an 80s car and backdated it to look like a pre-73 car. That's just market, right? That's whim. Like, nothing's changed about the cars. It's our perception of the cars that's changed. And that's kind of what I'm getting at. My perception, look, 0 to 60 time on a base model Boxster is, I think, 5.8 seconds with manual transmission. On the Audi, it's 5.9. My point is, it's not like the Boxster's more of anything, but I believe it's classified through insurance as more of a sports car. Hence, people are paying 350 euros a day for it versus, what, 90? All in for the Audi? That's weird. There's no correlation there between what the cars are and what we're paying for them. Bottom line is, I fucking kind of hate markets. I'm not an investor. Somebody's a millionaire off of markets. It's not my bag. I just kind of like things as they are. I wish I didn't, you know. It's the same about me giving up the booze and the drugs. It's like, I wish I could still go get Blotto sometimes, because every second of every day I feel what I feel, and other than coffee, coffee, I might need one shortly, there's no escape from my state, right? So I have to learn how to change my state without that. Now, guess what? We talk about this all the time. Easy change of state is adrenaline and anger. Okay? It's an internal drug. might not be the best alternative. For me, it's better than heroin. But eventually, it's got to give to something better because I can't be angry all the time. I can't have arguments in my head all the time. It just didn't work for me. It doesn't work for me. By the way, I got a little prayer for all y'all. Dear God, I forgive so-and-so for any wrongs they have done me, real or imagined. I pray only for their peace, love, health, and happiness. I release them to you with love. Amen. A little prayer for you when someone's up in your craw, in your head. Warning. It works. Don't do it unless you're willing to change. I contend that most of you won't see that through. I was advised to do that kneeling in the morning, kneeling at night, for 3 weeks when I had this resentment over an ex-girlfriend that wouldn't go away. Well, guess what? It went away, and the worst part, you know, you ever run into an ex-girlfriend? This is a separate idea about the ex, but you ever run into an ex and there's no feelings there? It's the saddest part of a breakup, is knowing that one day you won't care. You won't be angry or not angry. If you have an ex and you're still angry at them, unreasonably about stuff, you're still in a relationship with them. And that's okay. I mean, do whatever the fuck you want, but they're not quite an ex yet. Until they can't rile you up more than anyone else. That's just, you know. Now, there might be extenuating circumstances. You may share property with them. You may share kids with them. You may still have feelings for them, even though they're not right for you. So they are an ex, but you can't be with them. You know, by the way, I talked about that Al-Anon stuff. Like, maybe they're an active alcoholic and you can't be with that, but you still love that person. Or have love for them. So yeah, you're still entwined a bit. But that for me is always the saddest part of a breakup, is you're going to run into someone and they're just kind of, you know, you did the time with them. That can't be erased. God, that's one of my favorite phrases in Point Break. You know, where he's talking about Tyler and he goes, "We did time." It's such a beautiful thing because I remember watching that when I was like 18 or 17 and just, oh. And it didn't, you know, I know it's a prison term, but he didn't say it that way. We did time, man. And I really feel that way. So I've done time with my exes, but I don't have those feelings toward them. Not today, I don't. But guess how that, I had to like remove exes from Facebook and stuff, you know? Not all of them, by the way. Just the ones with whom I wouldn't want a coffee. You know, Lisa's an ex of mine who I'd happily run into and be like, "Oh my God, we should grab a coffee." We did time. We did proper time. She's still a friend of mine on Facebook. We don't interact a ton, but that to me is just like any legit Facebook friend. There's other ones who I've run into since and I don't really like. But they were Facebook friends. And I was like, why do I have this what is this? Why are we liking each other's photos when we don't even like each other? So, you know, remove as friend, no big deal. But yeah, that idea of the detachment where it's neither on nor off, there's just no relationship with it. In any case, I have this 100% consciousness because, sorry, let me go back to the prayer idea. You do that kneeling. Now again, this takes action. So when you're super pissed off at someone, are you happier, like last podcast, my mom with the German, are you happier being pissed off than you would be to not be pissed off? However, my contention is the resolution isn't going to look the way you want. It's not going to be that person going, "I'm sorry." And by the way, like I was just talking about, usually when I get that, it's through a bullied aspect anyways. They just want to be done with me. "Stop, Sean. Fine, you're right." That's not satisfying for me. What's bizarrely more and less satisfying at the same time is when I pray to release that person to my higher power, all of a sudden, it works. It's not once. It takes a course of action. wow, what do you know? Seems to be all I ever talk about. Yeah, it takes a bit of work. Thinking it and going, oh, I understand that. Oh, yeah, no, I get that. No, no, no. Getting it and doing it are different. 20 years of Zen practice. And yeah, by the way, I want to go back to that idea with the Zen idea that I talked about a number of podcasts ago. Again, it doesn't look the way I thought it would look. I mean, one of the most fundamental sayings in my life is one day at a time. That didn't come from that first Zen book, right? That didn't come from that 18-year-old idealizing what Zen looked like. It came from more searching, more seeking. It had to come from different directions, and it had to come from a pretty tireless, even a lot of that booze and drugs had to do with trying to get in the moment. And it worked for a long time. It made me very present. Hyper-anxious, hyper-vigilant, type A teenager benzo gave way to very in the moment. Maybe it didn't matter if I had to work the next day or had a girlfriend. All that mattered was what was happening in that moment in front of me. Not maybe the best way to be in the moment, but a version of it for sure. So my point is the journey took a lot of turns, is taking a lot of turns. That prayer, you know, your feeling toward the resentment in 3 weeks, the resented party, it's you have to be willing to unlock a bit of a box, and the box is probably not going to look, it's going to be like that ex, sadly, no feeling about that thing. But if the feeling's what I'm getting off on, even if it's negative, well, A, I hope that's not how you're getting through your days, because I've done it and it sucks. And when I currently do it, that's why I try and reshape the thoughts and go, dude, don't go down that path. But again, much like all this shit, I don't just get to say that once. If I'm driving along in a resentment or an anger or a fuck that person or a situation in which I want to have an argument in my head and win pops in my head and I go, Shauna, come on, don't do that. The thought will probably pop back in 4 seconds later. Come on, Shauna, don't do that. Push it out again. I don't just get to go, oh yeah, no, that's the, and then at a bar chat with buddies and be like, you know what you can do when thoughts create, and tell them like I do it. Because I don't know anything, I can only ever preach what I practice. So I never have to worry about practicing what I preach because I don't know anything. Like, I don't know anything. But I know what I've done, and I know what happened as a result. That's it. That's all I know. And so I don't have to worry about practicing what I preach. I just preached what I've practiced. And even then, it's past tense. But even in this moment, I'm becoming someone I'm unaware of. So who gives a shit who that guy is? But I can tell you that I'm driving now at 92 kph. We got some trucks ahead of us. Can I tell you how much I love driving? Have we talked about this? Well, I wouldn't do a car cast otherwise. Holy shit. I cannot wait to get home to my car. By the way, I hope this is relatable outside of cars. If not, what are you going to do? It's me talking. My old car, because of markets, I was worried about doing what I want to it. Most, namely, pulling out the AC. It's going to drop 75 pounds out of the car. And I just want a purpose-built vehicle. And the AC barely works anyways. But I was really hesitant to do this because the quote-unquote value of the car. Well, first off, the affected value down the road wouldn't be more than a couple grand. And I don't plan on selling this car. If I have to, I will. Point is, the AC's fucking getting yanked out of there. It's taken me a while to come to this conclusion, but I want that thing to be my car. I don't want a market that I don't even care about suggesting to me that that shouldn't lose something in it that I don't even want in it. I can't wait to get rid of the console at my feet and have just the shifter down in the center and pull out. I don't know. I just wonder how many other things in my life I want to modify, but there's this external force that's not even real making me afraid to. Huh. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking that out loud. I'm not trying to, like, passive-aggressively suggest you're all doing that. I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, I think home decor is one of those things, but only if you care about it. If I don't care about home decor, IKEA's great. You know, just do that. Or fucking HomeSense or whatever it is. But if I care, don't tell Emily, but you won't hear this. Ooh, you might. Ooh, this will be nice. I don't think she listens. She picks up the odd bit of the podcast, but I'm not kidding when I say half the reason for this podcast is to save my relationship. Oh, I would not want to hear me doing this every morning, but I don't mind hearing, let's say, my favorite podcasters, you know, an hour or two a week when I choose to. Anyways, point is, she gets enough of me. So I got some art for the house that she, to surprise her, and it's I'm so excited about it because this isn't art that I've seen in anybody else's home. One of the things, by the way, is Peter Andrew Lustig's Point Blank project is these guns, and it's so funny how, like, you know, anti all that, you know, shooting stuff. But I do like me guns. That's for sure. That's for sure. I enjoy shooting them. I think they're beautiful. I'd happily melt everyone on the planet so no one ever had to get shot or oppressed by, like, Congolese fucking 14-year-olds who are shot up on heroin and made to, like, shoot their village next door so that guys can control access to mines. I mean, you know, it's not just North America and America where, but whatever. I mean, we've uncorked, we've opened that box, and it's not like one of those awesome Star Treks where we can just, you know, as everybody's squared off in the Mexican global standoff, we just, they all glow to a heat so that no one can touch them. And then the, like, human forms go, we aren't actually even human, and they become glowing orbs and go, one day you will be as advanced as us and you will understand. Gene Roddenberry was a fucking genius, so far ahead of his time, and still ahead of his time. But we're not at that time yet, are we? We're not at Kirk's time yet, or on that planet that was even so far advanced of Kirk's time. One day, maybe. I'd go there, is my point. I think that there's something there worth going towards. But until there is, I've got a big 3-foot bit of photo art that's a gun pointed directly at the viewer. And then another one that I don't wish to explain because it's private and romantic. So, Peter, thank you for those. You're a fucking photographic genius. Oh, what a drive, what a drive. I wish you were here with me. I actually wish you were. I mean, I don't mean physically each one of you, but I do mean, like, having this experience, you know, along with, to see, to feel, to taste. I'm sure some of his parents are dead, and for that, I'm sorry, or not. Maybe they abused you and fucked them. To have the chance to grow with my parents, it's a really beautiful thing, you know. I don't think I'll ever fathom, maybe until I own my own kids, maybe never. Maybe it's like that crying I talk about where while crying a lot, I had a friend say, don't need to know why. I don't really need to know why I enjoy going on a trip with my mom. For all the obstacles it involves, including even just booking the damn thing. Working as an actor isn't, you know, for me anyways, I don't always know my schedule, and I don't always want to book off ahead of time, legitimately. I mean, I think it's important to be able to own your own life and be under the dominion of no career, but I genuinely want to book my next gig. I want to create, I'm so lucky, man. I had my nose operation this spring and then did all the Saving Hopes. Literally, the Saving Hope finished. I started teaching a new class. And then this trip, I booked on sort of a vague, like, hope I can. And not even kidding, I was up at my summer camp and my agent phoned and was like, can you conceivably cut your trip short for this film that you're probably going to book? And I said, please tell them no. I can't really, like, between me and you, it would be possible, but just say no. I don't know. No. And I hung up. And it's so funny because not only did I not think about that film for two straight days, which is very rare for me, but I just had more fun up at camp, let's say, than I'm used to having when I'm up for a role because I want to somehow groom the moment. But I didn't. And then they said, oh yeah, you start 2 days after you land back. The third day back. So I have two full days to... I've obviously been preparing on the trip. That's kind of fun too, you know. It's like my mom would go to bed and then I'd work. Work might, by the way, involve watching a film or imagining in my head a bit of the life of the guy I'm playing and then how I... Well, I mean, the guy... I'm the guy, right? So... just imagining, growing, putting myself in that sort of funnel, see what comes out. So it's not literal. I'm not sitting there doing, you know, actuarial tables, but I do need to do the work. It was a real nice way to do it. You know, I actually think I probably got a lot more done imaginatively than I would have had I been in Toronto because the frames of reference were all different. So I believe my imagination could be sparked. I always wish... You know, Heath Ledger, when he did The Joker, he got to lock himself in a hotel room for a month and just go into that thing. And I always regret that, not regret, it's the wrong word. I wish where I was at in my career meant that I'd get job offers further upstream. Because what happens for me often is I'll get roles and they'll start a week and a half later. And even if they're a real good role, I haven't had a chance to create anything maybe more interesting or full for it. Now, 90% of the time, it's just me that has to show up and behave, and the funnel is the script. So I'm doing what the character does. I'm saying what they say, kind of is me, but it's not me. It's an interesting sort of blend, and it works, especially for the lead roles on TV. But for the shorter film, more discreet things, I want to create a bit of something. It's still going to be me. But I want that month in the hotel is what I'm talking about. And it's hard to have when I have financial responsibilities and I'm not getting paid the way Heath Ledger is. My point is by actually following my own gut about this trip, by saying no to things I would have said yes to in the past, like, oh, of course, whenever they need me, I'll be there. It's like, no, I can't. This trip with my mom's probably a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And, you know, it's more important to me than this film. Turns out it works out. And in a weird way, I get a deeper version. I get the hotel room that Heath Ledger got. Not every second of every day, but, you know, there's a... And by the way, look, there's a depth of feeling traveling with my mom that, again, I'm not going to have in Toronto. Why would I go imagine? Everything I talk about is... that emanation from the scene of the crime, you know? And my old therapist, when I'm like, does it always go back to my parents? As I'm bawling on his couch, he's like, you know, my ears are doing this. I've never seen it not. It's the fucking scene of the crime. Go parental, go to God, or whatever your faith might be. You don't even have to name it. That's it. Everything's a version of that. Are you in faith or fear? So... I can go to the hotel room alone, imagine things, or do copious amounts of drugs, and emerge with one thing. Or I can go fucking hang out in a car and in hotels with my mom, feel things I won't even ever know I'm feeling, and then go play a role in which I'm trying to create a depth of unconscious feeling for this guy. What? You know, it's actually a greater challenge because it's living while doing it. I'm not saying it's a greater challenge than Heath Ledger went through. I don't know what he went through. I know for me, sometimes actually living it while doing it is better than tapping out of living, which is what that hotel room and drugs and stuff might be. I don't know if Heath Ledger did drugs for that. We know he did drugs. Who knows? We'll never know what he did in that room. That's the point of being alone in a hotel room. So I can podcast about a trip with my mom, but you'll never know what happened in the glue moments, you know? And I'm all about the glue, man. And that's where I say, I don't even know. I don't even know. I'm going to remember some aspect of this trip in 40 years that I don't know I witnessed. And if you don't think that's true of yourself, that's where I say you're probably an asshole. I know when I think I got the whole picture is when I'm an asshole. Seriously. And look, I'm not talking about like when I'm directing a movie. Again, that has to do with that hierarchical structure where there's an agreement. And if we're shooting this thing in 10 days and I'm the one, you know, who understands the multicam and what we're going after. Yeah, I get to say, hey, enough input. We're moving on or whatever. I still don't have the complete picture. I'm just tasked. If anything, I'm being of service in that moment. Obviously, people can run away with that. And believe me, if Barn Wedding ends up blowing up and becoming the next Blair Witch, maybe I'll be unbearable on the next film. Or maybe I was on this one and don't realize it. Who knows? Whatever. I just don't have the complete picture. And when I think I do, watch out. Pass off. Pass off. Because that's when, that's when it's trouble. That's the whole I know who I am and I'm going to tell you all about it. You know, I don't really think I like kids that much. And then I'm with my 4-year-old nephew through my cousin today. And he just kind of looks at me and smiles and I just kind of melt and I smile. And then he comes and holds my hand. And we eat breakfast together while he's holding my hand. I don't have to think I like kids to, in that moment, like kids. It's just, you know, in that moment, that's just about as fun a time as I had on this trip. So maybe I like kids. I don't know. It does. I don't care. It's like my cats. I fucking hate my cats. You can have them. They're shit. You know, but I'm going to feed them tomorrow night. And I, you know, whatever. They're going to get fed and the lid is going to get changed. I think I owe Emily a few of those. She's been taking care of the kitties for a week. I cannot wait to get home and see my goddamn girlfriend. Woo! I cannot wait to hug that woman. I'm the luckiest guy on the planet. I really am. Nobody's luckier than me. Sorry. Sorry, Brad Pitt, it ain't you. Sorry, Neil McDonough. I know you're one of the few people who says it like I say it, but it ain't you. It's me. I'm the luckiest. Maybe you are too. What do I know? Maybe you are, but you know what? It's me. Okay, my friends, that's, you know, we got up to about 197 there, by the way, while talking. I said 200. I lied. He lies. I'm going to grab a little snack, make my way to Frankfurt. This drive is going quick. I don't even mean mentally. I mean, it's actually going quickly. Oh, guess what? By the way, it's also considered, statistics have shown that when there's no speed limit, there's less fatigue, right? Because let's think about it. At 200 kilometers an hour, I'm not averaging that, but I can get somewhere in technically half the time. That means I'm not on the road for 4 hours. I'm on the road for, let's say, 2.5. That's less fatigue. There's actually less fatigue accidents in Germany than in other countries because you can get somewhere quicker. So you're not on the road just sitting there going, And by the way, when you're driving a speed that's insulting to you as a human, you are
basically numbing out, right? Imagine being an advanced level calculus student and having to go do basic trigonometry or even high grade level addition. You'd numb out. Well, that's where you're going to miss something. Whereas when you're engaged, i.e. driving, it's safer. It's safer. And it's better. You deserve better, people. Let's get rid of speed limits in Canada. You deserve better. You deserve not to be insulted by your government. And dear police officers, lest you think I hate you, I don't. You deserve better. You're more capable than that bullshit. Love you guys. That's a wrap on Chatting Between Takes. Pass off.
Give it to me. Give me the guy. Good morning. Good morning. I want to ask you a few questions and I want them answered immediately. Stop whining.